Welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week's Delaware primary brought an end to one of the most watched and most contentious races the state has seen, this year's Democratic primary for governor. It also produced some eye-opening results at both the top of the ticket, where a largely unknown newcomer muscled his way into the U.S. House race, and down ballot, where Delaware's House Speaker is suddenly out of a job. To dive into these storylines, we sat down with University of Delaware Communications Professor Paul Brewer, Delaware Politics Director at UD's Center for Political Communication, to get his analysis of the state of play post-primary. Let's jump right in with the governor's race on the Democratic side. The big question going in this highly contentious race was how much the long-running questions about Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hallong's campaign finance issues would influence the race, as opposed to, say, the questions about outside PAC support for Matt Meyer. Hallong did ultimately lose by a fairly substantial margin to Matt Meyer. Is it fair to say Hallong's issues were the primary or among the primary reasons she lost and Meyer won?
Well, I'll be a little careful here because we only had a little polling in this race, but Hallong entered the race, seemed like in a fairly good position. So she was a two-time incumbent, long-term member of the legislature. She had the endorsement of the outgoing governor, John Carney. So presumably name recognition. We found she had at least moderate to substantial name recognition. So clearly something went awry, and the most logical suspect would be all of the attention focused on allegations of campaign finance improprieties.
Is it also fair to say it was the almost like drip, drip, drip nature of it between essentially October and really almost right up to the election itself?
Yes, I think one story might have been easier to put behind her, but there was a string of stories that generated negative publicity for her, and perhaps most importantly, became the fodder of a fairly well-funded negative campaign against her.
And not just on that, but also some of the negative ads that were aimed at her opponent, her main opponent, Matt Meyer. There was a third candidate, Colin O'Mara, but it seemed like it was largely between those two frontrunners. And you mentioned this negative campaigning because, you know, when our reporters were in the field on Tuesday, they heard from many voters they were turned off by the negative campaigning in that race. And some Democratic Party officials suggested to us that it might have even drove turnout down. Turnout wound up at 22%. Down from 32% in the primary in 2020, the last presidential election that had, you know, kind of the same type of races, governor, U.S. House, U.S. Senate on the ballot. Do you think that the tone of the campaign could have affected turnout?
Yeah, so there's longstanding debate in political science whether negative information depresses turnout or whether it persuades people. I think it's at least plausible in this case. Now, it's challenging to get turnout in primaries, so there's a bigger picture there, but this was a pretty negative race. And I talked about the negative campaigning against Hallong, but you brought up, certainly there was a lot of negative campaigning directed at Matt Meyer as well. And I also found it interesting that a lot of this campaigning seems to have been driven by not the campaigns of the candidates themselves, but by PACs.
This negative vibe that surrounded the governor's campaign, is that something the Democrats, you think, are going to need to address in the next few weeks as they start to pivot toward the general election, and maybe even beyond that? Do they need to kind of mend some fences here?
Well, it seemed like a pretty bitter primary battle. And on the one hand, Democrats have been in the driver's seat in statewide elections for a while. So you could look at that and say, well, it doesn't really matter, but it might behoove them to mend fences and, you know, get on the same page, because I think one factor in the Democratic Party's dominance at the statewide level has simply been ideological. Delaware is a blue state, a relatively liberal, relatively progressive state. So any Republican candidate is going to have an uphill task trying to win a statewide election. And it's been a while. What was the last one? Ken Simpler?
Yes, correct. He was something of an outlier if you look back to even 2000. So over two decades, that's kind of like, you know, he and Tom Wagner, who was a longtime Republican auditor, kind of kept getting reelected. But once he was not on the ballot, that office went to the Democrats. But you do bring up an interesting point. I mean, can the GOP candidate in the governor's race, Mike Ramone, seize on a fractious Democratic primary to perhaps give himself a better chance? Perhaps he's already seemed to try to position himself as a kind of more thoughtful, moderate-type Republican. His first press release after the primary was about his support for reproductive rights and LGBTQ plus protections. When President Biden stepped away from the presidential race, he actually put out a release thanking the president for his service and saying how much he admired the president. Is that a strategy?
Yeah, and that was the other side that I was going to, the other angle I was going to take on this is that I think another factor in the Republican Party's lack of statewide success in recent cycles has been that the candidates that they've put up have been relatively extreme and not well positioned to win statewide races. I'm thinking here like candidates like Lauren Witzke or Scott Walker. You know, these are not candidates that have a serious chance of winning. Mike Ramone, on the other hand, he was a state rep for quite a while before this and has historically presented himself as, I think, a more moderate centrist Republican. So I think he's at least better positioned to do better than a lot of the candidates at the statewide level that the Republican Party has nominated. And on the other hand, I think it's still a challenging task. I think looking back, Colin Bonini ran against Carney. I think he also presented himself as a, you know, a non-fire-breathing Republican. He was actually remarkably congenial with Carney in the debate that we had here at UD. And it didn't work for him in the end. But, you know, cycles differ.
And perhaps what Ramone's hoping for is a combination of how he presents himself and perhaps some fissures on the Democratic side, maybe, you know, combining into a perfect storm for him, something definitely to keep an eye on. You mentioned the Republican Party, so let's talk a little bit about their side of things. Their endorsed candidates did largely well, with one notable exception. The party-endorsed U.S. House candidate, Danielle Hall, was defeated convincingly by a relatively unknown newcomer, a former state police trooper, John Whalen. You mentioned Scott Walker. This is kind of reminiscent of Walker's win over then party-endorsed Lee Murphy in 2018. Is there a way to explain this?
Yeah, now I don't know too much about the specifics of that race, I will be honest, but kind of broader impression of where the Delaware GOP is right now, I think potentially a reflection of the national GOP, which is that the Republican Party establishment over the last 10, 15 years has really lost a lot of control over the direction of the party. And I think this really starts both in Delaware and nationally in 2010 with the Tea Party, where you have Christina O'Donnell with a surprise win over Mike Castle. And you mentioned the Murphy Walker. I think it's just not as easy and safe for kind of establishment Republican candidates to coast on that.
So down ballot, the biggest surprise was Delaware House Speaker Valerie Longhurst, who had just ascended to Speaker a year ago, losing to Kamala Smith in the House 15th District Democratic primary. We have seen this recently. A couple of state Senate president pro tems have lost in recent years. Tony DeLuca, Patty Blevins, David McBride in 2012, 2016, and 2020. Is this becoming a bit of a cautionary tale for leadership, Democratic leadership in the state, that the voters are watching and you can't necessarily feel like you're immune from challenges?
Yeah, this does seem to be getting to be a pattern. And it is striking because historically, big picture, incumbents losing in primaries is pretty unusual. And people in leadership losing in primaries is even more unusual. So to see a string of these makes you wonder what is going on here. And I think one factor that could be at play here is that as the Democratic Party has really become the dominant party in Delaware at the statewide level, you see a lot of the tensions and competition over the direction of policy and politics in the state play out at these primary levels. And I think you see a growing tension between the more progressive elements of the party and then the more centrist establishment elements of the party. I think this is a case where Smith identified as a progressive, right?
That's where I was going to go, is, you know, she is a Working Families Party endorsed candidate. That is the progressive branch of the Democratic Party. And this is certainly another feather in their cap. She joins the likes of Eric Morrison, Sophie Phillips, Medina Wilson-Anton, Cindy Romer, and others who have been part of that kind of subset of the Democratic Party who have earned their way into the legislature. Now, in fairness, not all of their endorsed candidates are successful, including the gubernatorial candidate they back, Colin O'Mara. But it does seem like they're growing in influence. Is it fair to say at this point that they have kind of shown that Delaware is moving a bit into a more progressive spot?
I think there's been a pattern of certainly not all progressive candidates have met with electoral success at the primary level, but there has been a string of candidates who have, and I think at the policy level, the impact of that might be to push the state more progressively in what the legislature does.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you next, which is, I mean, obviously there's still a general election to be held, but, you know, Matt Meyer clearly has everything going in his favor, and he clearly is more progressive than John Carney. I think nobody would argue that point. Pairing that with a more progressive House in general and perhaps more progressive leadership than Valerie Longhurst or before her Pete Schwarzkopf brought to the table, is that a sign that some progressive legislation that perhaps stalled or some people say got watered down wouldn't in the coming years if all the chips fall the way they're expected to?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something major to keep an eye on if Meyer manages to win the gubernatorial election and some of these candidates who won their primaries go on to win in the general election. Is for a Democratic-dominated state, Delaware's had some progressive legislation, but I think a lot of progressives have felt that leadership in the legislature and in the governor's office has been sometimes a roadblock to going as far as they would want to go. So will it go further? I think that's definitely something to keep an eye on over the next 2 years.
Thanks to University of Delaware Communications Professor Paul Brewer, Delaware Politics Director at UD's Center for Political Communication, for joining us on The Green this week. Up next, we dive into ways to support youth civic engagement and get more young people involved in politics. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.